ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Text Number 9.
Tasmin kute ahite naste kritamule vanaspato vittapa eva shushyanti vishnu pranah diva okasaha. Tasmin kute ite nashte kritamule vanaspato vittapa eva shushyanti vishnu prana divokasaha. Tasmin kute ite nashte kritamule vanaspato vittapa eva shushyanti Vishnu prana divokasa. Tasmin kute ite nashte kritamule vanaspato vittapa eva shushyanti Vishnu prana divokasa.
Ladies. Anyone else like to chant the verse? No? Tasmin, when he, sorry, kute, the most deceitful, ahite, enemy, nashte, is finished, kritamule, having its roots cut off, vanaspato, a tree, vittapaha, the branches and leaves, eva, like, shushyanti, dry up, vishnu prana,
whose life is Lord Vishnu. Deva Okasaha, the demigods. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. When the root of a tree is cut and the tree falls down, its branches and twigs automatically dry up. Similarly, when I have killed this diplomatic Vishnu, the demigods, for whom Lord Vishnu is the life and soul, will lose the source of their life and wither away. Please repeat. When the root of a tree is cut and the tree falls down, its branches and twigs automatically dry up. Similarly, when I have killed this diplomatic Vishnu, the demigods, for whom Lord Vishnu is the life and soul, will lose the source of their life and wither away. Purport. The difference between the demigods and the demons is here explained. The demigods always follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the demons simply plan to disturb or kill him. Nevertheless, sometimes the demons very much appreciate the full dependence of the demigods upon the mercy of the Lord. This is indirect glorification of the demigods by the demons. Omagyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Tasmin kute yate nashte kvita mule vanaspato vitapa eva shushyanti vishnu prana divokasa. When the root of a tree is cut and the tree falls down, its branches and twigs automatically dry up. Similarly, when I have killed this diplomatic Vishnu, the demigods, for whom Lord Vishnu is the life and soul, will lose the source of their life and wither away. So we have here Hiranyakashipu bellowing his vengeful rage against Lord Vishnu, whom he feels has favored the demigods, and by so doing, killed his brother Hiranyaksha, to whom he is very much attached. We know that in family life, mothers and sons, and fathers and daughters, and family members, brothers and sisters, they develop some attachment there. Attachment meaning they feel they are a part of each other. Identified with their own bodies, they consider their own bodies extensions of their parents' bodies, extensions of their brothers and sisters' bodies, and to some extent extensions of their relatives and even relatives' bodies, because there's some blood connection. So they consider that they are extensions, and therefore it's only natural that when one's brother has been killed, or one's sister has been killed, and one is attached to the brother or the sister, one might feel some grief, some sadness. But in this case, the grief and sadness has been converted into a feeling of having been prejudiced against. Hiranyakashipu feels that Lord Vishnu has shown favor to the demigods, and he has treated the demons or the asuras unfairly. In other words, he feels that they have been discriminated against. And that has filled him with rage. Consequently, thinking that Lord Vishnu is simply a demigod like the others, he thinks, he believes, he imagines that he can kill Lord Vishnu. Just see the roaring, raging madness here. Why is he thinking this? Because he thinks he is the Lord. When one thinks, I am the Lord of all I survey, I am powerful, I am great, I am glorious, I am amazing, everybody honors me here, all the demons are all honoring me, they're glorifying me, they're bowing down to me, they yield to me, and I'm all powerful, and I will show this Vishnu just how puny he really is. This is his mentality. He's going to show Lord Vishnu how puny he is. He's going to chop off his head. He's going to suck his blood from the what's pouring out of the neck. And how, by that means, he will honor his brother Hiranyaksha. Very, very, very kind, very compassionate, very loving. This is demon mentality. It all comes from the original reason from which we have come down here, come down to this planet. Originally, we were all Krishna-conscious living entities, and being so, we had a desire to enjoy in a way similar to the Supreme Lord. He's the enjoyer in the eternal world. He's the proprietor. He's the friend of all. So that we're all independent, every soul is independent, but he doesn't have to exercise his independence. But if he chooses to exercise his independence, then he must act separately from the Lord. In other words, instead of being a servant of the Lord, he wants to be served as a Lord. So when that desire becomes very intense, one is no longer qualified to live in the eternal world. One has to go to a world in which one gets an opportunity, such as this world, the material world, to be a Lord. One may be a Lord in so many different capacities. You may be a father of children, and you're a Lord. You can say, do this, do that, do this. Or you may be head of a business, and you tell your workers, do this, do that, do this. Or you may become a councilman of a city, and you make laws, and people have to do this and do that. Or you may be a state senator. Or you may be a governor. Or you may be a a federal senator or member of the House. Or you may become the president. So all these are different kinds, different degrees of lordship. And everyone in this material world gets a chance to enjoy some amount of lordship, some amount of property. A very rich man may have a huge mansion, 40, 50 rooms in it. Like George Harrison, I think he had 100 rooms in the place that he had. He's very wealthy. And then there are people living downtown who live out on the street. And their only room is a big refrigerator box. Yeah. And they sometimes they fight over who's going to get into it that night, especially on a cold night. And God forbid somebody should tear the flaps away because then the wind will come in. So this is their little palace. The important point here is that everyone wants to feel like a proprietor, wants to feel like an enjoyer, and wants to have everybody admire him, adore him, glorify him, bow down to him. This is what we come to this world for. And when we receive those things, we feel actually a little bit uplifted. And when we receive much of it, we feel very uplifted. When many people, for example, you may be a singing artist, or you may be an actor, you may be a sports personality, you may be a politician. When people are cheering you, applauding you, raving about you, telling everybody to vote for you, telling everybody to see your movie. You feel so uplifted. You feel so rejoice. But then when the opposite takes place, when people say, oh, he's terrible. Oh, he stinks. Oh, he's horrible. You feel flattened. You feel crushed. Your sense of lordship is decreasing. Fewer records will be sold. Fewer people will go to your movie. Fewer people will watch you on TV, you know, do the slam dunk. Your fan base will decrease. The decrease of a fan base means that your sense of lordship is decreasing. And that's the very opposite of what we want. We come here to gain lordship, not to have it contracted. And so that's very frightening to people who depend for their identity, for their sense of happiness, their sense of fulfillment on all this external glorification leading to a false sense of lordship. And that means not only those out there, it's us too. I've seen devotees become puffed up with their lordship in the sense that, yes, I'm sannyasi, I have a stick. I wear my dhoti differently. I get a cushion when I come into the temple and you just sit on an ordinary red little mat. So this is lordship, and it's so dangerous and so poisonous. That's why when any time someone who is very distinguished, sannyasi, guru, GBC, whatever he may be, temple president, he has to always be thinking that when he's receiving honor, receiving respect, receiving glorification, he has to in his mind say, this is really not for me. It belongs to Krishna, who has put me in this position. And I am simply carrying out his wishes. I'm carrying out the wishes of my spiritual master. So that those wishes will be fulfilled and so many people will be made happy by such. He has to divorce himself from all of the effects, from the results, the applause, the jais. He says to think in his mind, this is not for me. Externally, he may bow his head and be very, very gracious. It's not that he jumps up and down and says, no, don't applaud me. I don't want to hear it. Get out. Or he runs out the door. That's another form of false ego, by the way. It's the same thing. Oh, how humble he is. Woo, look at that humility. He's running out the door. He doesn't want to hear himself praised. Another form of false ego, very subtle. No, he simply accepts it graciously and gives it away. And he's back to zero. That's our position, zero. But when you put Krishna in front of the zeros, it can be zillions and zillions. And that's what our business really is. Coming back to this particular verse, as it's mentioned in the purport, which is a very fascinating statement, it says, nevertheless, sometimes the demons very much appreciate the full dependence of the demigods upon the mercy of the Lord. This is indirect glorification of the demigods by the demons. Now, that appreciation is very interesting. It's not real appreciation because demons can't really appreciate anything anyone else does. Because if anyone else does something very wonderful and very good, and it makes the demon feel small, then how can he, where's their appreciation? Is it appreciation tinged with envy? And they're thinking, how could they glorify, how could they depend upon the Lord in the way that they do? How can they do this? Why are they thinking like this? They're thinking like this because they can't do that. They cannot depend upon God because they're thinking, each and every one of them is thinking, I'm God. Therefore, if I'm God, then how can I depend upon that person who they're saying is God? If I want to be God, then I depend upon whom? Myself. I'm the Lord of all I survey. Everyone and everything jumps when I say, hey, you, do this, do that. This is what, therefore it is a conflict. And they can't fully understand how these demigods will surrender and depend upon the Supreme Lord. Because when you want to be a Lord, you have to forget the Supreme Lord because you want to be supreme. If you want to be supreme, then Maya helps you to forget the real God. She's working with you and enabling you or causing you to become more and more illusioned, the result of which is misery, doubt, uncertainty, distress, pain, suffering, all of this. So that's a that's an interesting irony. But the demigods, their whole situation is this. They know, as it's mentioned here in the purport, they know that they are supposed to depend upon the Lord. Sometimes they also forget. Such as when, for example, when Indra had that assembly and the spiritual master of the demigods walked in. What is his name? Brihaspati? Yes. He walked in. And everybody got up, but Indra remained sitting on his vyasasan. He forgot he was a dependent. And not only am I a dependent upon the Supreme Lord, but on his great agents, on his great representatives. And that's the way I maintain whatever power I have. And I continue to increase it by the grace and blessings of the Lord. But when I ignore great personalities, I disregard them, that becomes the basis or the beginning of a fall down. And that's exactly what happened. The demigods lost their splendor and they entered into, as we already read through this months and months ago, but it was a very, very tragic situation which led to a tremendous fight. Ultimately, because the Lord favored the demigods, then Indra defeated Vritrasura and that ended the battle. But that needn't have happened at all. And in our own lives, by committing offenses to different devotees, offenses to the spiritual master, offenses to the Supreme Lord, offenses to sannyasis, offenses to gurus, offenses to GBCs, offenses to temple presidents. Any kind of offense will be met swiftly by the Lord's punishment to wake us up to the fact that we have to learn respect, we have to learn to honor, we have to learn to surrender. And by surrendering to these different personalities, we in the ultimate sense surrender to the Supreme Lord whom these personalities are representing. So that's the important point here. We bow down. We honor them. We jai them. For what reason? So that we can become purer, we can become humble, we can become modest, we can become unassuming. And to be that is to become pleasing to the Lord. If we become pleasing to the Lord, then He of course douses us with His mercy. This is so important. But a person, the demigods, they know what they're supposed to do. Krishna says in the Gita, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So the demigods, they follow this idea. They take protection from the Supreme Lord. They know He is all-powerful. They don't think the way the demigods are thinking, demons are thinking, that Lord Vishnu is just another demigod. He's the maintainer. Shiva is the destroyer. Brahma is the creator. And they're thinking they're Hiranyakashipu is equal. And Hiranyakashipu is reinforcing that idea by saying, I will cut his head off. He thinks he's actually equal, if not better. And that's why he then proceeds to enter Mundaka Mountain, stand on his toes for 100 years in the days in the time of the demigods, and acquire a tremendous amount of power. For what reason? That he wants to be sure he can kill Lord Vishnu. And what was the ultimate result? The ultimate result, of course, is that he had a son who loved Lord Vishnu, and who, by his profession or his avowal of his love for Lord Vishnu, caused Hiranyakasipu to hate his son, to consider his son an enemy, to consider his son someone who should be killed because he was causing all the other children to take to the worship and devotion and dedication to Lord Vishnu. So ultimately, Hiranyakasipu was going to try and kill his own son. He tried by many means. First, he had some servants try to puncture him with tridents, but his skin became like hard rock. They couldn't get into it. Then they threw him off a mountain, and Mother Earth just basically held out her arms and softened the fall. And then they threw him into the ocean, weighted with an anchor, but he didn't drown. Or they put him under on the road and they had elephants stomp him. No effect. They poisoned him. They subjected him to harsh winds, cold winds. They subjected him to hot fires. They tried to poison him. Nothing could work. And why is that? Because he depended totally and solely and only on his beloved Lord Vishnu. Do with me what you want to do. I really don't give a darn. Because if that's what my Lord wants, then that's what I want. Thy will be done. Your will, Lord, be done. So he wasn't afraid. He didn't feel frightened. He didn't feel upset. Although Hiranyakasipu felt very frightened by his son. Interesting. Little 5-year-old boy makes big-time demon frightened. Almost shaking, to the extent that near the end of the pastime, he wants to kill his son, and we have this wonderful festival coming up in a few days, the appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev. So he is going to try to kill his son, but first he's going to show his son that there is no Lord Vishnu in a column, like one of those columns. And he takes his fist and he smashes it into the column, and it cracks. He's so powerful. And out of that column comes a roaring, amazing, wondrous lion. And who is it but Lord Nrisimhadev ki? Yes, and then the fight begins. So that fight is a very interesting fight because it's one of the reasons why Lord Jai and Vijay were cursed to come to this world. One of the reasons is that the Lord likes a good fight every so often. It's part of the male nature to fight, sportsmanlike, not necessarily out of hatred or animosity like Hiranyakasipu. No, that's bad fight. That's wrong fight. That's no sportsmanship fight. But the Lord likes to sport. Sometimes girls, they often wonder, why do these guys always like to fight? What's all about fight? That's all they can do. How can we temper them? How can we quiet them a little? So it's part of the male nature to have a fighting spirit. But it also can be put into a good use. Srila Prabhupada had a wonderful fighting spirit. And that's why we're sitting here today. He fought to make this temple. He fought to erect so many temples. The Bombay Temple. He fought for the temple, the Fisher Mansion in Detroit. Srila Prabhupada fought for all of this because he felt... First of all, he was ordered by his spiritual master to try to bring Krishna consciousness to the Western world. And he was ready to sacrifice his life because he was totally, completely surrendered to the order of his spiritual master, which is so important. So the demigods, they are surrendered to the Supreme Lord. They believe in this, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, Krishna says, do it for me. In this way, you'll be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. with your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. So it's service without attachment to the results of the service. You have the right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities. Well, then, who is the cause of the results of our activities? The one who is directing our karma, which is the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if the Supreme Lord is the one who is the one who is responsible for making the arrangements of the results of our activities, if Krishna makes the arrangements and causes the result, then we should be always offering the results to Krishna. He owns them. We have money, it belongs to Krishna. You have clothes, they belong to Krishna. You have a house, it belongs to Krishna. You have a child, it belongs to Krishna. Whatever you have has come from Krishna. We should treat it as if it belonged to Krishna. And to treat it as if it belongs to Krishna means to give it respect. Sometimes I hear in some of the Christian or Catholic faith, they sometimes say, and this comes from some of their saints, they should just hate the world. I was reading recently. Should hate the world because the world is the devil's workshop. So we should just keep our mind on our beloved Lord. But our philosophy goes much further and much deeper than that. We don't hate the world. We see the world as a means of yukta vairagya. We can engage in the service of the Lord using the elements or using the matter of the world and offer those different products or creations to the Supreme Lord. All this, we don't hate this because it's matter. There's the deities. They're manifesting their mercy right there. Srila Prabhupada is manifesting his mercy. Why should we hate anything? The only thing we should hate is that which opposes God's will. Because it hurts, it harms, and it destroys people. So, therefore, the important point here is that for us, is that we need to, all of us, including yours truly, overcome this mentality of, I am the Lord of all I survey. And at the end of the evening, we have to ask ourselves, how many times today did I act like a controller, a manipulator, a dominator, an orderer, in such a mood, in such a fashion, as to make a person feel that he's small and I'm big? Now, we all have duties to perform, and sometimes you have to give orders. The question is how the order is given. Is the order given with love? Is the order given with kindness? Is the order given with sweetness? Or is the order given with a sense of, I'm bigger than you, I'm better than you, I'm higher than you. You do what I say because I'm your authority. If it's done with the latter, the person may do it, but he's not going to like you. And if he doesn't like you, he may do things which will be opposed to your wishes, ultimately. So the important point is this, is that whatever we do, whatever, as I said before, whatever we eat, everything has to be done as an offering to Krishna. We have to try to remember Krishna as often as possible. Krishna says, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna. And at the same time, perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me. And your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will come to me without a doubt. So Krishna is making a promise. And the promise is that we will come to him if we think of him while we perform our various duties, our obligations, and our activities. This is all important, and this is most important. That is our challenge. That is what we need to cultivate. How do we do it? We need to tell the mind again and again, I must think of Krishna while I'm doing my activities. Because I'm doing this for Krishna. And if I forget whom I'm doing it for, why I'm doing it, then it will just be service. But Srila Prabhupada so often said, let it be loving service, devotional service. For it to be loving service, devotional service, then we need to remember the purpose for which it's being done and the person to whom it is being offered, and that is our Supreme Lord Krishna. Let us not merely perform service which is beneficial, yes. Let us do it with love. Let us do it with appreciation. What a blessing! How gracious the Lord is to allow me to serve Him, the greatest, the highest, the best, the biggest, the grandest person. He's omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. He's everything. And He's allowing me to serve Him. Me, with all my sins, all my failings, all my wretched activities of the past, still He's allowing me, fool that I am, wretch that I am, idiot that I am, He allows me to serve Him. Where does such grace, where does such love, where does such kindness come? And yet it's there. Therefore, let me take it to my heart and let me try to do this service as best as I can, begging Krishna for His mercy since He's all perfect, so that I can do my service, whatever it may be, as well as possible. And as well as I do it today, I beg the Lord, please enable me, since You're all perfect, if it's possible, allow me to do it better tomorrow and better the next day. Let my heart be filled with the stream of bhakti. Let my head be at Your lotus feet. And let my heart be ever beating the tune of Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Mati Radharani, Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Mati Radharani, Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Mati Radharani. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki. Haribo. Are there any questions? Thank you. Are there any questions or any corrections? No? Nothing? Have a wonderful prasadam. Hare Krishna.